we have to be very, very careful. What we're talking is not so much democracy, we're talking organised hypocrisy. Hard facts.
The police have just arrived. The people are putting on their fists in solidarity with all surrender.
According to Catalan officials, 90% of people who took part in an independence referendum there have voted to break away from Spain. The Catalonian president has announced the region deserves to be an independent country following Sunday's vote.
With this day of hope and suffering, the citizens of Catalonia have earned the right to an independent state in the form of a republic. As a consequence, my government will announce in Parliament the centre and expression of our people's sovereignty, the results we have received today from the referendum.
With voting now wrapped up, Spain's Premier sent his congratulations not to the voters, but to the National Police for their work.
A very special thanks to the state security forces, to the National Police and the Civil Guard. They have carried out their duty and the mandate they received from the authorities.
Well, I don't know what was on the mind of Spain's Prime Minister Mariano Rajoy when he decided to unleash massed ranks of body-armoured, Kevlar-helmeted Guardia Civil policemen against unarmed civilians throughout Catalonia on Sunday, October 1st, for the crime of turning out to participate in a referendum on the region's constitutional future, whether it would remain part of a united Spanish state or it would embark on a new chapter as an independent state. But whatever was on Mr. Rajoy's mind, it certainly was not the preservation of Spain as a united state, because in unleashing this violence, he instantly became the best friend that Catalonian independence and separatism could have, and the worst enemy that a united Spain has got. And isn't it interesting to consider the difference in approach of the EU in response to these ugly scenes of violence, which was a response of near indifference and silence, and the response to the violence that has been taking place in Venezuela recently, where the Maduro government has been trying to defend the Bolivarian Revolution and Venezuelan democracy against a US-supported opposition. And then we have the difference in approach to the ugly scenes of violence that took place in Catalonia on Sunday, October 1st, and to the referendum that was conducted in Crimea in 2014, where not one hair on the head of one civilian who took part in that referendum was harmed, not one shot was fired. There was no scenes of violence. And this was a referendum, you will recall, that took place in response to a coup driven by ultra-nationalists and neo-fascists, which succeeded in overthrowing a legitimately, democratically elected government in Kiev at the beginning of 2014. And doesn't this prove, once again, that the West's political culture rests on foundations not of democracy, but of nauseating hypocrisy? But going back to Catalonia, whatever happens now, it does seem that Catalonian independence is a question now of when and not if. But we have to be very, very careful, because the decision by the Catalonian president, Carles Puigdemont, to declare unilateral independence on the back of this referendum sets us on a dangerous path, the consequences of which we don't have to look far to understand, i.e. Yugoslavia in the 1990s. The turnout of the vote on Sunday, October 1st, was officially stated as 43.3%. That can in no way be considered the last word on the matter of Catalonia's constitutional future, because it is highly likely, if not certain, that Catalonians who are against Catalonian independence from Spain would have boycotted the vote. But whatever happens now, moral legitimacy resides in Barcelona. Madrid has been shown up throughout the world. Its reputation as a democratic state has been torn to pieces. As for the EU, Its indifference and silence brings it into abject disrepute. I'm John White, and this is Hard Facts. Joining me on the line from Barcelona, we have Paul Monaghan. Paul is a member of the Scottish National Party. He's a former member of the UK Parliament, and he's in Barcelona in an official capacity as an election monitor. Paul, welcome to the show.
Thank you, John.
We speak 3 days after these ugly scenes of violence on Sunday, October 1st. Give me an idea of what the political temperature is in Barcelona now. A general strike has been called. As I said in my introduction, the Catalonian president is introducing into Parliament, I believe, on the back of a referendum result, which he claims returned an overwhelming majority in favour of independence. And he's putting forward a motion to declare unilateral independence, a unilateral declaration of independence. So what is the political temperature now, Paul?
Well, today in Barcelona, it's very calm. It's quite a pleasant place to be. The weather's nice. The people are quite optimistic. I think there is a certain element of shock still at the conduct of the Spanish police and the Guardia Civilia, which took place on Sunday. But in general, I think people are engaged in the whole process. I would correct one thing that you said in your introduction, which was about the turnout. My understanding is that the turnout was 56% when you include the almost 800,000 votes that were taken away by the Spanish police. So the turnout was certainly more than most papers, I think, are reporting. And from everything that I've seen, the public here are absolutely engaged with the process. They're very knowledgeable about the whole situation. And they turned out in large numbers in very difficult circumstances on Sunday to place their vote. I think they're reflecting on that. They're looking to the Spanish government for some kind of recognition of the way that they have been treated. They're absolutely looking to the EU for some kind of support and some sort of recognition again of the conduct of the Spanish authorities, which have been absolutely appalling in the way that they've treated the citizens of Catalonia. Barcelona probably in particular, but I know that there's been significant trouble in the cities of Girona, Sabadell, Tarragona, and some other smaller towns and villages. So I think the mood, as you put it, I think it's one that's tempered by a certain apprehensiveness about the future and what that might hold, and of course, what the Spanish government are going to do next.
You mentioned the pristine indifference and silence of the EU, certainly compared to violence that we saw in Venezuela recently. Certainly Washington, Trump, as we know, he conducted a press conference in the company of Mr. Rajoy in the Rose Garden outside the White House in the days leading up to the referendum, and made no bones about it that he supports the unity of the Spanish state. I think what people have to understand that Spain is part of the architecture of the Washington consensus and Western imperialism. Mr. Rajoy, his government, has been a very close supporter of Washington's foreign policy, as have previous Spanish governments. But the EU has, within its Lisbon Treaty, the closest thing to a constitution that the EU has, provisions to deal with this kind of thing. So there's no real legal basis for the silence that that ensued from Brussels. Article 2, for example, mandates the protection of human rights, the protection of minorities across EU member states. And Article 7 mandates the expellation or suspension of the membership of an EU member state that violates those human rights and the rights of those minorities. What do you make of this silence? Do you think they were caught on the hop, or do you think that a political decision was making? Do you think that was based on fear of other centrifugal forces, other separatist movement? Scotland is an example that comes to mind, of course. What do you make of the silence that ensued? Because it was really unconscionable, wasn't it, watching these scenes unfold, that there was nothing, no strong statement of condemnation whatsoever from Brussels in response?
Well, on Sunday, I watched some of the worst of the police brutality, and it was really quite a sobering experience, quite a harrowing one, in fact, and certainly emotional. It's inconsistent with democracy for paramilitary forces to be dragging old women out of voting stations by their hair. These are some of the things that were seen, and there was much worse also. I think the position of the EU is now untenable. It cannot stand and say that it has a constitution, as you've pointed out, with various articles that protect human rights, and at the same time have nothing to say about the conduct of the Spanish government. As I've said, I think their position is now untenable. I think on Sunday, the Spanish government all but destroyed their international reputation as a modern democracy. If the EU's not very careful, that will spill over and the EU's reputation will be tarnished and potentially damaged irreparably also.
Now, playing devil's advocate for a moment, Paul, the Spanish government will say in its defence, and has been saying in its defence, that this referendum was held in violation of Spanish constitutional law. A decision was made by the Spanish Constitutional Court that this referendum would be illegal. And within the Spanish Constitution itself, which was established in 1978, there are provisions that dictate or mandate that the entire country must agree to any one of its regions holding any such referendum on its constitutional status. And that received an overwhelming vote. At that time, I think 90% and more, including the overwhelming majority of Catalonians at that time. However, Mr. Puigdemont was elected as the Catalonian regional president in 2015 on a mandate to call such a referendum. So here we see a clash between the mandate given to Spanish authorities and the Spanish government and the Spanish state back in 1978. Things have changed, obviously, since 1978, haven't they? So how do you see this seemingly insurmountable impasse being resolved shy of this unilateral declaration of independence? And we'll get onto that in a second.
Well, I think the first thing to say is that, as you've noted, Puigdemont absolutely has a public mandate to take forward the promises that he's made in the past, which include independence for Catalonia, or certainly the opportunity for people to vote for independence. During my time here, I'm absolutely certain that the public are aware that Puigdemont and his government are less concerned about having a vote to secure independence and in favour of having a vote to allow the people of Catalonia to have their say on this particular issue. It's about democracy as much as anything else. I've attended some briefings with the Catalonian government over the last few days, and they're very clear that the referendum is not illegal in Spanish law, and it's not illegal under the constitution. So clearly there are different arguments, technical ones, legal ones, around the constitution and what is legal and what is not. The views are obviously polarised. Rajoy has taken a very extreme view and a very fixed view. He's not really, from what I've seen, being prepared to discuss the issue. In fact, I think he said that we're not discussing it. At the same time, some of his ministers have offered the Catalonian government extra money and funding if they called off the referendum. The Spanish government have obviously, in my view, obviously instructed the courts to take a particular view and to issue certain decrees, etc. There are other judges here in Spain and in Catalonia that have said that the referendum is a political issue, not a legal one, and certainly not a criminal one. So I think an objective review of the situation in Spain is that the constitution cannot be fixed in stone and never subject to change. It has to have some element of fluidity. The people of Catalonia absolutely have a right to self-determination. That's an aspect of international law that would override domestic law in Spain and certainly in Catalonia. So it is a political issue. It's one that should be taken forward through dialogue. I think Rajoy in particular has failed to recognise that opportunity. And because of that, I think the people of Catalonia and the Catalonian government have felt that they have to take action to push the debate forward. Ultimately, I think Rajoy's poor handling of the situation has resulted in the referendum taking place. And the referendum, we must be clear, did take place. It has produced a result.
We're going to have to stop there for a short break. I'd like to get into the technicalities of the referendum and its legal and moral basis on the other side of the break. Don't go anywhere. We'll be back right after this. Hard Facts. Welcome back to the second half of this episode of Hard Facts. I'm sitting down with Paul Monaghan, who's on the line from Barcelona, and we are discussing the fallout from the unconscionable and ugly scenes of violence that met the attempt of the people of Catalonia to participate in a referendum on their constitutional future within Spain, regarding whether they're going to embark on a new chapter as an independent state or remain a region of Spain. Now, Paul, we're talking before the break, sorry I had to cut you off there quickly, but we're talking about the legalities of this referendum. Now, let's be clear, the people who are against Catalonian independence in Catalonia, and there are millions of those as well, obviously, they were denied, I think it's fair to say, their right to cast their vote or have their voices heard, because they would have clearly abided by the decision taken by the Spanish Constitutional Court that it was illegal, whether that stands up to scrutiny under international law or not. And therefore, it is highly likely that most of them would have boycotted the referendum. And yet, and we also have to consider that given the circumstances of which the referendum was held, you were over there as an observer, but who was observing the count? Where did the count take place? Was it done in public? Did it meet the standards required of any legitimate democratically held election as we would understand them? So I think there are lots of variables involved because of the disruption of the vote by the Spanish state. And this is why I think that, yes, symbolically, the Catalonian people have made it clear that they have the absolute moral right to conduct a referendum. Do you not see the arguments against treating this result as legitimate, given the seismic nature of the issue? Because I fear that we're headed down a path to civil conflict with a unilateral declaration of independence based on this actual vote. Your thoughts on that, please?
Well, I think the ball is very much in the court of the Spanish government, to be honest. I mean, the referendum has taken place. That is a fact. You know, I'm here as an international observer. I was selected on the basis, not of my political views, but on the basis of my academic background and experiences, and experiences of looking at counts and monitoring counts elsewhere. And
sorry, Paul, can I just ask you quickly, who selected you for that role as an observer? Was it the Catalonian government, or was it an international body that selected you for this role? How does this work, please?
It was the Electoral Commission of Catalonia that selected me to come as an international monitor.
Okay.
So, on Sunday, I spent all day in and around four polling stations in Barcelona. Everything I saw suggested that the count was being handled properly. Individuals did have the opportunity to vote only once. The vote was fairly robust. It was closely monitored. It was subject to quite heavy scrutiny at the count, not least by myself, but by others, political parties, etc. I felt that certainly from what I've seen, the vote was robust. It was conducted reliably between the four centres that I was at. That's until the Spanish police removed the ballot boxes from one of them. But I think it was a valid vote. Clearly, a very high percentage of people voted sí or yes. I think it has to be recognised. It absolutely has to be recognised. So coming back to Rajoy, if Rajoy chooses to say that this vote and persists with the view that it was illegal, I think he will deepen and entrench his position, which can only result in further difficulties, I think, between Spain, the EU and the Catalonian government, and potentially other member states of the EU who've taken a view on the conduct of the Spanish authorities in this event.
Paul, where's the UN in all this? I've not heard them. We're talking about Brussels, but what about the United Nations? I don't, maybe I've missed it, but I've yet to hear one statement emanating from the UN in New York in response to these scenes. I mean, where does the Catalonian government conceivably go if it embarks and it goes ahead and it receives the vote from the Catalonian Regional Parliament to proceed with a unilateral declaration of independence, because as I say, I think it's clear that it will not be recognised, certainly not by any of the Western states or governments or parliaments. Where does it go? It has to go to the UN to try and see get this matter adjudicated on. What's the position of the UN? As I say, maybe I've missed something. Have they taken a position on this as yet?
I have seen some reports that have come from the United Nations. I'm not sure how formal they are, but certainly some of the views coming from personnel within the United Nations is that the conduct of the Spanish government has got to be investigated, and the actions of the police in particular looked at, and from an aspect of criminal behaviour. So the UN has taken an interest in it. Of course, the Catalonian government would argue that they are simply accessing their human rights in terms of the right to self-determination. The UN obviously is, if you like, the world policeman in terms of the unilateral declaration of human rights. So the UN cannot sit back. It has to take an interest in this, in my view. It has to recognise that the Catalonian people, regardless of what the Spanish government says, do have a right to self-determination, and that they must be allowed to exercise that. No. So I think the UN and the EU, they are both going to have to get involved at some point and take a view on this, because the Spanish government clearly is not able to operate in an impartial and objective way in this situation.
Now, there are deep and close links between the movement for independence in Catalonia and the movement for Scottish independence, Paul, as we know. Nicola Sturgeon, the First Minister of Scotland and the leader of the Scottish National Party, gave a strong statement which stood in sharp contrast, a strong statement against the violence that was unleashed by the Spanish state, which stood in sharp contrast to the tepid, mealy-mouthed statement issued from Theresa May, the British Prime Minister. How does this, do you think, feed in, if it does at all, into the campaign for Scottish independence? Now, here we have to credit the Edinburgh Agreement, which, for all his many, many faults, and there are many, David Cameron does deserve some credit, because this was a mature democracy coming round the table to agree the terms of a referendum which took place in 2014, which was a testament to the potential of a mature democracy to deal with a very emotive issue by its very nature, self-determination. So how does this play in, though, to the campaign for Scottish independence, if at all?
Well, I think, first of all, you're right to highlight the importance of the Edinburgh Agreement. And I think that does establish a model or a precedent for how referenda like this should be taken forward in the future by perhaps all European nations, if not all nations around the world. So that is the model that I think that would be preferably adopted. It clearly hasn't been adopted in Spain. And as you say, Nicola Sturgeon has given some strong views on the conduct of the Spanish authorities, which do stand in contrast with Theresa May. I think it's ironic that just a few months ago, we had the UK government criticising Spain very heavily for its conduct in relation to Gibraltar and threatening to send warships to the Spanish coast to engage with the Spanish government. So the position of the UK government is weak, I think. Theresa May, like the rest of us, is probably fully aware of the violence that took place on Sunday, and she has an obligation to condemn that. The fact that she hasn't suggests that she has a political objective behind that, which might be to stall or to refuse the Scottish people to have a referendum in the future, which I think would be disastrous. Your question really is about, you know, what impact does this referenda in Catalonia have for Scotland? Well, I think it could perhaps set a model for how to run a referendum if the UK government chose not to allow us to engage with our human rights and to access our right to self-determination. I think the way that the referendum has been operated here in Catalonia has been very, very slick. There is no question that the Catalonian government has not been one step ahead of the Spanish government at every single step.
Absolutely. I mean, it's clear, but Mr. Puigdemont has played a blinder, really, in political terms, that is. Obviously, the grievous scenes of violence nobody can in any way justify, but he really set a trap for the Madrid government, and it walked right into that trap, didn't it? Because it's completely lost any moral legitimacy in this affair, regardless of the legalities. The moral legitimacy now belongs squarely in Barcelona.
Yes, I think that's absolutely right. And, you know, as I say, I think the Spanish government have been outfoxed at every single step. I mean, I thought it was quite amusing on Sunday, actually. I was at one of the polling stations at 6 o'clock in the morning. I arrived there to find probably about 500 or 600 people standing outside protecting the polling station. And it was raining quite heavily at the time. Shortly after I arrived, the police arrived to see what was going on. They got out of their car, had a look about, left. Then everybody settled down and we were waiting for the ballot boxes to arrive. We understood that the ballot boxes were going to be getting distributed. And it was ironic because shortly before the polls opened at 9 o'clock, word emerged that the ballot boxes were already inside the polling station and had been hidden there and there for several days. So that's an example of how the Catalonian government have really been very well organised. And they've coordinated efforts in quite a sophisticated way.
And we have to make the point that everything the Catalonian government, they've stressed all along that this has to be a peaceful campaign. No violence on the part of the protesters. The violence was all on the part of the police. Let's make that point clear. It turned into a mass campaign of civil disobedience. I mean, the scenes of the policemen grabbing, as you said, mentioned old woman by the hair. This was like something out of Alabama in the 1950s and 1960s, wasn't it?
I mean, it was disgraceful. I mean, the conduct was really appalling. I mean, I would say that the violence wasn't, you know, we shouldn't restrict the violence just to the Spanish authorities formally. I mean, I did stand and look at or watch a demonstration by Spanish unionists in the centre of Barcelona on Saturday, and there was significant violence there as well. The mood was very aggressive, very bullish. I saw a young couple being attacked by a crowd of Spanish unionists. I saw another gentleman who happened to be carrying a Catalonian flag again being attacked by Spanish unionists. I have seen no violence or any sort of threat or intimidation coming from the Catalonian people who simply wanted to exercise their right to vote.
The most potent weapon I saw the Catalonian pro-independence civilians carrying were keys or flowers. I mean, that was the symbols that were used. I saw red roses and I saw keys, which is symbolic of keeping the schools open as polling stations, and a sign or a demonstration of defiance against the threats that were being levelled at that stage from Madrid. Paul, what is the mood in Catalonia now? Defiance, determination. You mentioned the word shock. Is it a combination of all those things? What is the prevailing mood as we speak now?
Yeah. I think it's a combination of all of those things. There's anticipation, there's enthusiasm, there's some happiness. There is an element of shock, as I've said already. And I think people are apprehensive now to some extent about the future. They're looking forward to the future. There's no question about that. But there is a degree of uncertainty, and they would be foolish if they didn't recognise that. And they're certainly not foolish people. They understand what they're doing here. They understand it's about protecting their culture, it's about protecting their way of life, it's about protecting the social values that they stand by, and who can blame them for trying to protect all of those things.
And so do you believe that Catalonian independence is now an idea whose time has come?
Yes, I think that's almost certain. I would equally add that the position of Spain in the world is now in question, and the reputation of Spain is tarnished immeasurably, in my view.
You've been listening to Paul Monaghan in Barcelona. I'm John White. Until next time, remember, the only facts worth taking seriously are hard facts.